The William Hill Sports Show is owned and produced by William Hill. All opinions expressed by the host or guests are their own and are not endorsed by either radio station KUUB management or any of its advertisers. This is KUUB-FM Sun Valley, Reno.
It's time once again for the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva. Here's your host, Kenny B.
All right, thanks for joining us, and welcome to this week's version of the William Hill Sports Radio Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. This is Josh Nagel filling in for your regular host, Kenny B, who couldn't make it today. He fell ill a little bit. So I'll be hosting the show throughout the day, but one of our longtime panelists who we haven't seen in a while is with me today, Mark Vespi. First time in quite a while. Mark, glad to have you back.
Josh, good to be here. Yeah, just been a little busy with some work, you know, a little too much work. So it was nice to get an opportunity to come in today a little early. Ken is out under the weather. Talked to him earlier. He's sick as a dog. He said he's sicker than Cooter Brown. You know who that is?
That's pretty – your analogy alone lets me know it's pretty bad.
Yeah,
but
so he's
glad to have you back, and you're telling me, yeah, I know what you do for work. Like, the weather kind of helped you out a little bit, so you were able to, you know, get a bit of an easier day and get in here. So we are starting early for people who follow our show. Of course, we're usually on 5 to 6:30, but because of the national ESPN NBA radio coverage, we are coming in first, so we'll be on from 3 to 4:30, and then we'll send you out to the national feed. Of course, there's plenty of basketball going on, and not to mention every other sport, but we'll get heavily into the NBA playoffs, where it looks as though there's a really good chance both conferences are headed towards seven-game series. There's been finally some, you know, pretty entertaining games. And, you know, last night, of course, the Houston Rockets found a way to get a 3-2 lead in the series against the Golden State Warriors. Pulled off a close win at home, or pretty wild finish there. Golden State couldn't get a shot off, down by two. And Chris Paul, of course, though, on the last play, hurts his hamstring, and he might be out the rest of the way. So there's some interesting changing dynamics there. But, Mark, might as well talk about what's on deck tonight, because anyone who wants to watch can see at 5:30 the Cavaliers and Celtics. We're going for game six in Cleveland. And it's funny how this dynamic has gone, because when it's in Boston, it's usually kind of a pick 'em, or, you know, Cleveland's even been favored by one or two. They turn the tables to Cleveland, it's always been this Cavs minus 6.5 or 7, and they've covered. So far, it's been one of those kind of bizarre series. I mean, I think similar to Boston's first round series against Milwaukee, which the home team won and covered every game. Except there was one, actually. Game one, Milwaukee covered the point. So, or actually, no, it did. That's the one that went to overtime. I think that, yeah, the home team did cover every game. And so it's just bizarre. Like, we know there's a huge disparity. Most teams have these pretty extreme splits in the NBA between home and road, but usually you see some bit of variation along the way. Mark, I'm curious what you think, because yeah, after Boston won the first two, I honestly wasn't surprised. I knew they would execute well. I knew, unlike, you know, they're similar to Indiana in that they were going to provide the Cavaliers some resistance, but they're also better. They're more talented and better coached than Indiana. I knew it would be something Cleveland wouldn't really be able to handle. So I wasn't surprised at all when Boston went up 2-0. What I was surprised at, basically, is that they got blown out at Cleveland twice, because I really thought one of them, okay, game three, you could see that happening, right? A little bit of a natural psychological down spot for Boston. Cleveland, you know, knocks them out, 30-point win. The Cavaliers were going to be highly motivated, and that was understood. But I actually thought game four, and it did get a little close at the end, but I was also, similarly though, they were in control most of the way, ended up, you know, winning that one by 9, and Boston basically just made a late surge, but they were, you know, down 15 or so the whole game. You go back, so now people wonder, you know, is Boston, all right, they've got such a young core, they're going to be a little rattled now. Is it time for, you know, LeBron to finally lead them to a road win and kind of take control back of the series? And instead, it was like a replay of game one and two. I mean, Boston, you know, struggled a little bit early, but then they got ahead. They got ahead to stay, and it was pretty clear Cleveland stood no chance of coming back. I mean, there's a couple times very late in the game, you know, after trailing, you know, 15 or so most of the way, Cleveland cut it to 9, I think, once, but Boston got a timeout, and Jason Tatum, who I've been impressed with, it's hard not to, but don't you think it's crazy, Mark? The guy's 20 years old out there playing against, you know, LeBron, who's, you know, been the top player in the league for so long, and yet every time Boston looked a little rattled, Tatum was the guy who steadied things. You know, he'd make a play, he'd either get a shot, or he'd set someone else up for either a layup or get fouled or whatever. But he, to me, had kind of command that, you know, the floor leadership. And so here we are again. So, you know, 3-2 Boston lead. Boston rolls to a game five win, and the Cavaliers are minus 7 here in game six tonight with a total of 201.5. So, Mark, my question is, you know, is it the typical, are we going to keep going here with what, you know, we call the zigzag concept, where every game is just sort of a, you know, an opposite result based on where the game's played, which has happened so far every game in the series? Or one time, do we see the dog, you know, come in there and if not win, at least get the money with the points? What do you think?
I think it's just going to continue the way it's been. I see the Cavs having a big effort. I mean, they obviously have to. Just they have to win as it is. I think they're going to have another big effort. I mean, seven does seem like a lot of points, but these games that the Celtics have been on the road is just, you know, they fall down early and they just get away, with the exception of one or two games where they were in it in the first half. But these teams pulled away. Even the Milwaukee series, you know, Milwaukee pulled away and covered the spread in their home game. So I don't know if it's a youth thing or what it is. You know, I don't know what the mindset is with the Celtics, why they're struggling so bad on the road. I mean, they're undefeated at home. You know,
right. So it's, and you'll like, see 10-0
And so it's pretty crazy. And that's good coaching and good defense, you know, and that translates usually anywhere. But for some reason, they're struggling in Cleveland. I like Cleveland here just to, you know, kind of jump out. I think you get a huge effort from LeBron. I'm interested to see later on. We'll talk about the props and stuff. We'll find out what LeBron's totals are, because typically in these kind of games, he throws up 40, 8, 9, you know. So he could put up 60 on the combination of all those stats. So I'm looking for a big effort out of him. But the key with Cleveland every time is if he gets some effort, some production out of his role players, if these guys, if Korver and Love and Smith and George Hill, if these guys can hit a couple threes each, then the Cavs seem to roll on, you know what I mean? But if they struggle, then the Cavs struggle, and then they lose their kind of effort quick if it's not happening for them. You know what I mean? Like you said, that last game, how quick did you know that was over? I mean, it was seemed apparent early.
I agree. Ed, like I said, as soon as the Celtics basically grow that lead by double figures, it looks like it kills the will of Cleveland pretty quick. What do you think, Mark? It's interesting because you're right. I wonder about these games in Cleveland. Is it so much about the Celtics or a difference in the Cavaliers? I will say one thing I noticed pretty distinctly. Of course, well, the Boston shooting percentage went way down in games three or four. They look like they struggled a little bit, did not have quite the, you know, efficiency and flow their offense normally has in terms of the cutters, getting people open, whatnot. But especially, you know, in game two, I mean, it looked like, you know, they shot less than 40% in both those games. Some of their stuff still worked, meaning some of their sets, some of the stuff that they run to get guys open, they just clunked a bunch of open shots. I guess, you know, that's going to happen. What strikes me as odd about Cleveland's role players, I mean, it's funny because we expect, you know, you see it at every level, all right? People like the comforts at home. But as I was telling my buddy the other day, who actually works in the NBA front office, he works in international affairs overseas. But, we talk about the game sometimes. I said, to me, though, it's such a alarming disparity. It's no matter where you go, the hoop's the same height. You know, these guys are paid just a king's ransom to be able to put it in. So even though you realize, you know, you're not going to play as well, to me, the disparity with Cleveland is unreal, because you realize, Mark, in the last game, LeBron, 26 points, a somewhat subpar game at his standards. We had 26 points, almost a triple-double. He had 10 assists and, like, I believe 9 rebounds. He and Kevin Love were the only guys in double figures for Cleveland. And you realize in the NBA, it's pretty rare. You usually have at least 4 guys in double figures, sometimes 5 more. But just him and Love and everyone else had absolutely nothing. And like you said, these guys aren't scrubs. The guys who were supposed to be key players, guys they traded for, a guy like Korver they've counted on for a long time, a guy like Clarkson, guys who have proven they could play. And it just looks like you said, they're borderline inept by NBA playoff standards. They get back in the home court and suddenly these guys are, you know, lighting it up, you know, out of nowhere. George Hill, these guys are going for 15, 17 points. They did in the block. They were getting 6-7 guys in double figures. And to me, it's like, how do you explain a dynamic where the job is always the same? It's, you know, there's that old cliche. It's, you know, it's not where you play, it's how you play. So I'll never understand. But in fairness, I said, you know, Boston has sort of trended the same way, where they don't look anything like themselves on the road. But for some reason, I got a feeling this one's going to be sort of tight, only because one thing you never see, Mark, is LeBron is good. His track record is very good in elimination games. But this is, you know, where it comes to a hilt. You won't see him facing elimination on his home court very often. And there was the speculation. Now you see much quicker turnover, right? Before there's 3 or 4 days in between games. But now we're getting down to the finals, and there's only, you know, with that one day of rest in between and they're back. If he admitted to being fatigued the other night, I mean, again, still one day in between, and they got to play tonight. And I'm just wondering if this is the one where now that Boston's been back in touch with, you know, their quality performances, I sort of have a feeling Boston's going to push this one to the end.
Yeah, and I don't love laying 7, you know, with against a team like Boston, because, I mean, they've shown the, you know, the heart and the defense and the coaching. Like you said, you know, they ran their set plays the other day, and that's where the difference in the coaching is with me, is like the Celtics get their opportunities, you know, because they're well coached and they run their sets and they get open opportunities. Now, if the shots go down or not, I mean, that obviously affects, you know, some of the outcomes, but they're definitely getting the looks, you know what I mean? As far as LeBron being tired, I mean, you know, he kind of took the second half of the last game off, and I expect him to come out and looking to score early, like he has done a couple times in these playoffs where they really needed him. Like, you know, and if his shots are going down early and he's able to get a little push up, you know, early in the game and get it going, then I think Cleveland will just kind of go to an easy victory. But I'm not going to be surprised if the Celtics are hanging around to the very end. I would be surprised if they won the game just because I think, you know, LeBron's will is – I never doubt LeBron, man. This guy – he's got 61 road wins, so, you know, if they can win this game at home and then go into Boston, I mean, I would actually still like the Cavaliers. In fact, you can bet the Cavaliers at a pretty good price right now to win the series. I think it's plus $7 maybe.
That's not that high.
And so that's a number.
Plus 160.
Oh, it was plus $7 a few days ago. Yeah. Before the last game.
Okay.
So – anyway, so we missed an opportunity there, but
wait, when the series was tied, the price was higher?
Yeah, there was.
How is that possible?
No, yeah, when it was 2-2, they were like plus 755 or something to win the series. Yeah, because it was going back to Boston, but now the Boston won.
The price has gone down. All right, that doesn't.
Anyways,
so what? Yeah,
that's not my point. My point
is they were down 2-0.
My point, but my point is that Cleveland, they need to win, and I think they're going to get it tonight. I think LeBron's going to do his thing. You know, I think what's funny about all these playoffs, mostly those, this road and home splits, is that they talk during the year about, oh, we can rest our guys as long as we get in the playoffs, 1, 2, 3, or 4 seed, doesn't matter. Home field isn't that important. Well, or home court, sorry. But home court apparently is important in some of these. You know, I mean, even the Warriors could use a home court advantage right now because, you know, I mean, that game last night at Houston was all about the home court. You know, I think Golden State would have survived that game at home.
I agree. And there's huge guys that wouldn't normally make, like, say, Eric Gordon, the guys who are making the killer plays that have shown. Or Gordon's looking like an all-pro in Houston, and he can't hit it. You know, he's 1-for-9 in Oakland last time. He's a guy that doesn't travel, you know, well. I just agree. Some of the breaks they didn't get, those are sort of the home team things that are factored in to the 4-point, you know, swing, usually putting the spread for home court advantage, and Houston basically exploited all of that. And I'll put it this way. Like I said, those extreme splits, I think it's more understandable with Boston, given that Tatum is 20, Jaylen Brown's 21. They are the younger ones. They're the ones who are going to feel way more comfortable in their, you know, safe home environment, be a little bit flustered. What I don't get is so much on Cleveland, because like you mentioned, historically, LeBron's teams they've been excellent on the road. They found ways, obviously, even this year, they swept Toronto, but they sort of had the Raptors beat anyway. But historically, their teams come up pretty big, so that just goes to show you his surrounding. There's something wrong with the inability of everyone else, you know, to be able to step up and, you know, be solid in these games. And some of the guys, you know, George Hill's a veteran. You realize the guy led, you know, the Utah Jazz last year in scoring. I mean, he's supposed to be a veteran guy you can count on. None of them have been reliable so far. But go ahead.
Don't you get that idea, though, as the season's going along and you're seeing these guys rest and take this time off or not push through this, you know, push through January or February to get a good record so that they can stay in contention for that home court advantage? And you just hear him talking, well, you know, rest is more important. We don't need our home court, you know. But in my mind, like when I'm hearing all these things, I'm like, this could totally come back to haunt him. And I just, as a, you know, a sports fan for, you know, so many years and knowing what we know just watching all the games, like home court is an advantage. And like I know there's a big consensus about in the NBA home court isn't that big of an advantage. They say that it's – some people are trying to say that it's, you know, the worst home court advantage. But when, in fact, NHL is actually the most meaningless home court, or
right,
home ice,
right,
and baseball is second.
Right.
You know, so the NBA and the NFL are, you know, not too far behind, but of the four sports, you know,
I'm
NBA
sure
is the third.
You're aware, to make a cross-sport analogy, I know you're a Patriots fan, a few years ago, where they seemed to not care about home field, and they just, oh, who cares? They just, you know, I'll say, sort of tank, but they didn't really try hard. The last, you know, lost home field to Denver, and then lost the AFC Championship game.
They went into Miami on the last game of the season, and they went through the motions, and they're like, oh, it doesn't matter. We're just resting guys. Doesn't matter. And then went to Denver and lost, and could have been a totally different story at home. Now, you don't know for sure. Denver was a good team, but, and their defense, you know, defense travels. Can you win
an AFC Championship game in Foxborough? You know what I mean. You're right. There's
usually in Foxborough they win those.
Right. So you had mentioned, Mark, and we got this list from us. So there's individual player props at William Hill Sportsbook for these games, and there's some interest here because, as you mentioned, LeBron has a habit of coming up big in these situations. There's various players and props to choose from. Let's go through a couple because the one specifically you mentioned, this is going to sound like a really high number, but this is what it is. LeBron James, total points, rebounds, and assists. So you basically everything he does well in the box score on your side, 54 as an over-under on LeBron.
For me, I think you got to bet that just over because
just you realize 30, 10, and 10, and it goes under.
I know. But you got to think LeBron's getting 40. He scored 40, six times so far in the playoffs? I think that's one or two shy of the record. I think Jerry West has the record at 8 or something is what I was hearing this week. But in any case, you got to figure he's got a couple, especially, in an elimination game. I think he tries to set the tone early. I think you could see, a 16 or 18-point quarter, maybe more, out of him in the first quarter. And, he's getting 6 or 7 assists and rebounds at least, just playing the game the way he does. So I think he gets 40 points, you get that 54.
All right. Fair enough. He probably does because he's going to get his assist as well. There's one right off top here, that's not a player one, but the prop I like the best of this one's largest lead of the game, pretty common prop you see in most of these games. But the over-under on this is 16.5, and I like it under because I just don't think – I think it's going to be a reasonably competitive game, but obviously if you go over there, you're basically saying Cavs just washing them out from the start, and obviously that's a huge lead to build. I will say I do think they led by that much in the first two home games, but I just don't see this one getting out of hand. You know what I mean? And Cleveland could win comfortably and not clip that. I'd like your chances on the under for that.
I don't think that's a bad idea at all. I think Celtics will be in this one, as opposed to some of those other games where they've just been kind of out of it early. When you've got a chance to wrap it up, and Celtics are going to give an effort for sure. So I like that. I like that line, too. I think that stays under.
A couple more. How about Kevin Love? So does he come to play or not? He has mostly been solid in the series, but his total points and rebounds, 26.5, meaning, of course, you need a pretty decent game from him to send that over.
Yeah, and I think LeBron tries to get him going early, too. And, what's he been averaging in the playoffs? He's been averaging like 22 or something. He's been doing pretty good. I mean, these other guys, Hill and Smith, I think LeBron probably leans on Love a little more than the rest of them, so I think that's kind of a short number. I don't love it, but I would lean over on that as well.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the two, somewhat invisible, but sort of key role players that don't do much when they lose, those exact guys, Jarrett Smith and George Hill, both each just points, 9.5. So it's basically, it's like you're expecting one of them to have a decent game. You could take the over.
And I think I would stay away from Jarrett Smith. That guy
I would, too.
I mean, I feel pretty good about George Hill getting 9.5 because – I see him getting a couple threes. Then you just need a couple free throws and another bucket.
And he finishes pretty well inside.
And he's been shooting well at home. And he's been getting a couple threes a game at home. And I think 9.5 is a short number there, too. I'm gonna look at that one a little further. But I'm leaning over on that.
Especially, I'll probably stay away from the Celtics since they are sort of the question mark here. But just to throw out some of the numbers, actually, I think Al Horford I would take under. But your Celtics numbers here, Jason Tatum, for points and rebounds, he's 23. Jaylen Brown, points and rebounds, 18.5. And Al Horford, 23.5. Did you play any of those?
They're just so tough because some of these games can be, for example, that last game, we're watching kind of the replay right now. It's 91-74 with 2 minutes left in the game. And, there's just no way to gauge the pace of these games. There's been a couple that have kind of gone to the over side of it, but most of them have been lower scoring, unders in the first half, and barely getting there if they did in the second half. So I don't like betting over too much on a lot of these totals except for guys like LeBron or,
So you would, like me, you'd probably pass on all the Celtics.
I would pass or look under on a couple of those guys.
Yeah, I would just think the only one I have any interest in is under on Al Horford.
I kind of like that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get back to more NBA and every other sport after we get back from our first commercial here. So please join us again in just a few minutes. William Hill, Racing Sports Show, ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to this week's version of the William Hill Race and Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, this is Josh Diggle filling in for Ken Bartler, who's ill, can't be with us today, but I'm joined by Mark Vespi. And before the break, we're going over your first NBA game of the weekend here. Again, Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals is tonight at 5:30 p.m. You have the Cavaliers hosting the Celtics in Game 6, and the Cavaliers are a 7-point favorite with the total. Mark, we didn't really talk about this, but the total is 201.5. Kind of interesting because you mentioned the tempo in this one. You know, I thought especially sometimes the Cavaliers would push the pace, and Celtics are pretty multi-faceted when it comes to tempo. I was surprised how many unders we've seen, but the point being, this series opened with some totals like 206.5, 207 range. And we've seen quite an adjustment to where we're down to 201.5. Of course, it's kind of low by today's NBA standards, but did you have any play on the total?
Well, in a lot of these, you know, I always look to bet the first half totals, you know, see if I can get a lean on something. But, and you've seen these 206s with the first halves being like 101, 100, you know what I mean? And so I think it's 97.5 is the first half for tonight. But, and they, those seem like low totals to me. So I have taken a shot at betting the over a couple times, and I've won one and lost the other one. But a lot of them, they've been on pace, and then like towards the second or towards the end of the first half, really slow down, and you don't even approach the number. So these totals are tough. I mean, 201.5 seems like a low number, but this could just come down to a possession game. And if you get those stretches of 4 or 5 minutes where, you know, they're just kind of fighting through it and not really, you know, trading buckets or anything like that, then these go under no problem.
Well, you know, another thing, you know, the scoring dynamic really influences the total at the end, the margin of victory being, you know what I mean, a closer game actually influences higher scoring, because if they're within a couple possessions, they might either foul or they're inspired to score quick and get that timeout. You see what I mean?
Sometimes that does end, translate in the pros, but right, they just don't shoot as many free throws, right, but it can still, you've seen
right
programs but where
you
they
know
score
what I mean?
20 points in the last
minute. Right, but in there, exactly, because there's so much of that end game, you know, timeouts and stoppages. But I guess what I'm saying is the last
especially
one, though,
a win or go home
lends itself to an under, though. But when, you know, Boston's, like I said, rolling by 15 or more in the last 3 minutes, there's all subs, and they're, you know what I mean, lots of shot clock violations, yeah, and they're not even trying. So, and actually, I said a tighter game within the last 4 minutes will usually prompt more scoring. But so we'll move on to the next game. But before we do so, Mark, your top pick here is Cleveland -7. You're going to play the chalk?
I think the Cavs roll. Seven is it's a tough number, but they've been covering these numbers at home, and I just kind of look for that trend to continue. And I've been betting it that way, so I'm just going to keep betting it that way.
And
I'm plus money right now.
So
I'm just going
right
to keep going.
And so, and also give us one prop, then an over on LeBron's humongous total.
Yeah, I think
54.
Because I think he gets 40, and if he gets 40, he's getting over 54.
All right, fair enough. And my pick would be, I like Celtics with the points and just the under on that prop for biggest margin of lead, because I don't think we're going to see, even if Cleveland blows
them out. Have you noticed one other thing, Josh, the money lines being a little high for the point spread as it is?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've been -6 or -7, and I've seen the money lines go up to even as high as like -410.
Yeah.
Or 420, and without moving the number.
No.
So I feel like they kind of feel like it's going to cover, you know, they put a heavy price on the money line.
I agree.
More than, you know, maybe 50 or 60 cents more than you would normally see.
No, you're right, and I've noticed that. And you know what that is, Mark, too, though, because so many people, well, some public bettors do this as well, but a lot of the people who love to lay the big chalk and just say forget the points, they don't want to make that easy money. You see what I mean? And people who are well-heeled and don't mind, oh, I'll do whatever, you know, I'll pay the price it takes to win, say, $1,000 or $10,000. They just don't want to make. They want to make you think twice before you just play that huge chalk on the money line. So they just keep bumping up that.
Well,
price.
One thing, you know, with the NHL playoffs going on and baseball going on and the NBA playoffs going on, you know, I as a bettor, if I'm going to watch these games at night, you know, you get home from work, you go put on your TV and you're watching all these different games. I like to bet a money line for the playoff game, money line for the NHL, and a couple, two or three baseball money lines, throw them all together. So, you know, it makes a big difference, you know, a 330 or a 420, you know what I mean, when you're putting those parlays together as a money line parlay.
Oh, no, I
and
agree.
I've just
that's
noticed
your,
that it's been a
I know what you mean, yeah.
Quite a big
but that's
difference.
The point. They want a dent for people who do bet exactly like that.
Yeah, and so I was just curious if you've noticed it because I definitely have.
No, for sure. But like I said, I do think, you know, Mark, in the NFL, it's a big thing too, right? Like playoff games, 7-point favorite. A lot of people just, oh, screw it. I want to play this spread. I'm just going to go ahead and hammer that money line. Like I said, they just want to sort of discourage that by charging you as much as possible.
Yeah.
But so let's move on to the next game, though, Saturday. So tomorrow night, again, these it seems like the NBA playoffs take forever, but then when you get down to the Final Four, they start, the series start rolling pretty fast, and we'll have the finals next week no matter what. But Warriors and Rockets will be Game 6 tomorrow night in Oakland, 6 p.m. I'm sure people are fresh in their minds about last night's game. Pretty dramatic finish in Houston. It was down 2-1. Everyone was counting them out, right? They got clowned. They lost by 40 points in Oakland. Everyone's saying it's over, and they lost the first game at home. Suddenly, they find a way. The other night, 8.5-point dog. They hang in there. Chris Paul, making some huge plays. Harden had a decent game, of course, that pretty memorable dunk on Draymond Green. Got them back into it. What, they were down 12-0 or something to start the game? The Warriors, I mean, Houston looked out of it again, but they started slowly climbing back. They made a few plays. It did just enough. And let's face it, I mean, it's hard to win in Oakland anytime, but they hadn't the Warriors hadn't lost a playoff home game in whatever, this recent era here. And so that really sort of changes the dynamic of the series. Then you wonder last night, all right, that's really, the pivotal game. It basically was a pick 'em the whole time. And you could see, if you looked around enough, it was -1 and, pretty much on both teams. That's how William Hill all day was steady on pick 'em. And, it was similar dynamic, to the prior game in that it was much lower scoring than you'd expect between these two teams, more physicality and defense being played, kind of a wild sequence of events. But right down, toward the end, I mean, Eric Gordon of Houston hits a huge three-pointer. Golden State had a few opportunities that they just blew. A few one, for instance, where Draymond Green had a wide open lane and chose not to take it. He kicked it out, and then, of course, he had the big turnover at the end. I thought the first one, at the end, I mean, that's terrible, but whatever, that's going to happen, bouncing off your knee. I thought the other was a much bigger mistake, where I thought he could have drove the lane and dunk it. I thought the previous possession where they had like kind of a, it's almost like a 4-on-2 or 3-on-2, and Draymond, he was right about the free throw line, and he kicked it out instead of, I just figured, if he drives the lane, he scores or gets fouled or both, and he just sort of kicked it out.
Yeah, he had a couple like that.
Right. It's like, why, and I saw some of my Twitter feed too of people who follow the team, like, why does it seem like that guy who's normally not passive at all seemed like he was hesitant to get in there and take it to the hoop? And he would have been a few times, but the kick out that ended up with the Quinn Cook shot, I mean that was pretty bad. But
I'm always indifferent on Draymond because like he's such a unique player, like we just don't see these hybrid type players like him very often, with that skill level in all areas, but at the same time he can be such, he can cost his team games. Like,
I agree.
In my opinion, he cost him the NBA championship.
Well, yeah, when he got kicked out of being a knucklehead and getting kicked out and suspended.
I think that's the only reason that the Cavs won. Now, the Cavs took advantage of it, and LeBron was amazing. But had he played Game 5, I don't think they
would
have
lost. Having a huge series. And here's what's funny, Mark. Like you said, I feel the same way on Draymond. I'm torn. Because he'll do that. It's like, God, he seemed tentative. And a few times last night, too, where he got offensive rebounds and he's right there. He's kicking it out. Like, man, you know how strong the guy is. You know he can finish. What's he think? I think he got embarrassed. That one time he went for a dunk and got blocked by Capella. Suddenly he doesn't want to, take it in again. And what's funny is that, for all those flaws and seemingly questionable decisions he's made, he drilled the three that gave them a chance to beat, what I mean, within that possession.
And that's the thing. It's like I have so much give and take with him. It's just like, bugs me some of the shenanigans. I just don't like the shenanigans.
Yeah, you know what I mean? When it seems he's taking you out of the game with a bunch of poor plays, and then suddenly there he is. But, on that last thing, like I said, you dribble the ball off your knee. I mean, they were going to have a hard time getting a shot up anyway, whatever. I mean, that was stupid. I still thought, though, the play where he could have taken it down the lane and didn't was harmful. But
he does so many winning plays, but then he'll have a couple knucklehead plays, and he's too smart and too good of a player to do those things, I think.
Right.
So it's frustrating, you know what I mean?
Right. So the Rockets get it. They can make a couple free throws. So there it is, 96-92. So when everyone thought they were out of it, suddenly this strange reverse dynamic of the series where Houston is up 3-2 now, coming back to Oakland tomorrow night. We see on our odds sheet here that Warriors is -10.5, but that is since with the announcement that Paul's out for good with that injury, it's now 12. I've even seen as high as 12.5 some places. And
it started normal at 8, right, like it has been kind of, and then as soon
it started at 10.5. They figured
factoring that in already.
Right, it was already factored in. They ruled him out for good, immediately jumped a bucket. And what do you think? Here's what's funny, Mark, because I feel like the whole world just feels like, oh, yeah, Warriors are just going to clobber him and wait for Game 7. I don't, only in that, here's what's funny. Chris Paul is the most important player. Like, believe me, I also thought last night in terms of you know, we talked about who made the key plays, and Houston really did come through in a lot of ways. You could, you know, whatever, you criticize the Warriors, but Houston also made some big ones. I thought, and it's too bad, Mark, and for what it's worth, that hurt me. I've got a pretty decent-sized bet on Golden State to win the championship at plus 130, and I bet them on the spread last night. I actually thought they were going to bounce back. I had Houston the prior game. And but what Chris Paul did, I mean, those were the killers. And those threes, you know, fall away threes with guys in his face, the shot clock. I actually loved the shimmy that he threw.
The one hit was just luck.
Well, two of them, but still, nonetheless, the shimmy he did in front of Curry. I was like, I mean, I kind of liked it, to be honest, because I don't like. I think the shimmy thing's ridiculous. That I mean, Steph Curry is known as that's what he does for. You know what I mean? At some point, the novelty
of
hitting shots, I think, needs to subside for Curry. So when he got sort of taunted, I kind of liked that. But but nonetheless, I mean, Houston made all the key plays. Chris Paul in both games was just, like I said, for all the ISO and everything they do, he bails them out is what I'm getting at. You know, he's got that great mid-range. Somehow he gets in the lane. He makes these shots, bails out, poor possessions. And so without him, obviously, it's a devastating loss, Mark. But look at the last two games. They've actually won with James Harden not playing well on the offensive end. He's missing a high volume of his shots. He's missed 23-pointers in a row now.
Yeah, he hasn't made a three-pointer since game two or something, right?
Right. And So even though his high volume, but even like last game, he ends up with 19 points. Or the guy that leads the league in scoring, that's a poor game. And he had a really bad field goal percentage. Like we mentioned, guys who can step up. Eric Gordon, really, he looks like an all-pro at home. He hasn't seemed to travel yet. Ariza can play well. And, Mark, I know if Ken were here, he would talk about how the NBA is pretty well known for this situation, though, where one guy goes down and somehow, at least in the short term, they give a good effort. Now, I don't put it – I'm just going to talk strictly based on the spread because I don't think they can win in Oakland again without Chris Paul. But can they cover 12.5 without him? You know, does Golden State sleepwalk a little bit, think, oh, we've got this? I do think if Harden just takes over, and I believe if they have guys like Ariza – you know, Clint Capella, if they get that extra really strong game from a role guy, I think they could at least cover it. And I do think you'll be fading the public. I'm starting to warm up. The higher the spread goes, I'm starting to warm up to another play in Houston.
I think a lot of it has to do with the health of Iguodala and Thompson, because with those guys available and healthy or healthier, I think the Warriors just kind of, you know, step on the neck. Because sometimes these Warriors, they just show up. When they need to win or they have to win, they just play incredible. And, like, they're just like, okay, enough of this, and they just play an amazing game. Now, you know, is that going to happen? I don't know. I mean, 12 seems like an awful lot of points. You know, I'm not even considering even laying the 12, you know. I'm looking at, like, a teaser situation between tonight's game and tomorrow. Like, I want to take, you know, Cavs, Warriors, two-team – maybe 4 or 6 point teaser, you know, I'm looking at it that way. But it's just tough, you know, because I think the Warriors, when they're pressed to this kind of situation, they usually respond. So
I thought that last night.
I bet the Warriors lost at home last night too. Yeah. But Thompson wasn't right, and you could tell his shot wasn't right. And this is the thing about Thompson. Like, I know everybody tries to say that he's like this amazing player stuff, but he disappears sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, he can disappear in games. And his shot,
I hear you. Does he disappear, though, or do they, you know, or is he still, you know,
I don't know. He
had the third option. You know what I mean?
He had like two air balls last night. Do you ever see him shoot air balls? I mean, not very often. He must not. I don't know if he just wasn't quite healthy. Maybe he shouldn't have been playing. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't healthy enough to be, you know, contributing the way he normally does. I don't know. But like I said, if him and Iguodala are good to go tomorrow with, you know, a couple more days of rest and rehab or whatever, I think the Warriors will be in a good position to run away with this game in the second half. You know, it might be close. But I'm not going to lay 12. Like I said, I'd probably do a teaser situation. I just if the Rockets were to go ahead and beat the Warriors, you know, I hate the Rockets, but if they were to win, I just think it would be kind of a cool thing because the arrogance of the Warriors starts – kind of frustrates me sometimes.
And I also want the Durant thing to backfire.
It frustrates me sometimes.
I didn't want it to, when he signed there, for it to mean like 5 straight titles. So you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so especially after they won it a couple years ago but then lost to Cleveland, it was like, you know, a little humility. And like, yeah, I just didn't want to see them have just this reign of dominance now that they added Durant and won the championship pretty easily last year. I just want it to be proven. Like you said, it's not an easy thing in any given year. And just to have some – semblance of competitive balance, I do think it would be cool if Houston managed to knock them off.
Yeah, but on the other side, like, I like greatness. Like, I get in these conversations with Kenny all the time about LeBron, you know. He doesn't know what he's watching with LeBron, like the greatness of LeBron. Like, so I like it when LeBron defies all these things. Like, if LeBron comes back and wins these next two games, you know, and just adds to his legacy, I think it's going to be fantastic. But if they were to get beat, I mean, it'd also be a good thing on another level, you know what I mean? So I'm kind of indifferent in both ways. Warriors lose, yeah, it'd probably be a good thing, but I also like greatness. And if they were to continue this and win the NBA championship, I think it'd be a cool thing,
yeah,
too.
Mark, I get the comparison you're making, but I just put it this way. To me, they're two separate things. The LeBron thing, I totally agree with you on, and maybe Ken doesn't appreciate it. His individual greatness and how he's carried so many teams through the finals, I think it is something that does go underappreciated. In the Warriors' case, though, like, say, for that, you know, comparison, to me, it's not a parallel thing, only because the Warriors, you know, people don't realize, just a few years ago, it wasn't too long, they were, you know, more of a franchise that they built through drafting and everything. Not a single top five pick, right? Curry, I mean, they did it the old-fashioned way. Thompson was 11, Draymond Green a second-rounder. They built from the ground up. But the whole Durant thing, just to me, it makes it feel a little bit manufactured, and it really, you know, threw the whole competitive balance of the entire NBA out of whack. So to me, if you could see Houston, who added Chris Paul, finds a way to somehow one-up them, I mean, I just like it because I didn't, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of adding Durant to the team that needed him the least, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they're different. I don't think they're parallel, but I think they are, you know, just from a greatness to a, you know, kind of a comeuppance level, I think it's a good thing either way.
All right, we're going to go after our next commercial break. Please join us again in just a few minutes here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Nagel, Mark Vespi with you here. Ken Barler and John Stevens going to be with you today. But we've got plenty to go over in this show. Before the break, we've been looking at these NBA playoff games. Mark, tomorrow night we'll wrap up our coverage here real quick on the Warriors-Rockets Game 6 at Oracle Arena in Oakland. Again, opening line of 10.5, but we know Chris Paul is now out with the hamstring injury. So the current line, I've seen 12.5. William Hill's dealing 12. Mark, one thing we didn't mention real quick is the total. You mentioned the adjustment that's been made in Cavaliers Celtics because of, you know, series of games that went under. This one as well, you realize the first couple of games they were dealing, you know, 226.5, 227. People couldn't bet the over fast enough. I mean, that's a huge slice in that total. Maybe the Paul absence also deals into that. But, you know, we're talking about chopping off 12, 13 points of the total from the very first couple of games because here we're sticking at 213.5. What do you think really explains two teams that aren't really known for defense? Are they really stepping up, or are we just seeing just more, you know, poor offensive performances?
I think it's a combination of both because, you know, when you watch these games, there's not a lot of flow to it. You know what I mean? It seems like in the regular season when these two teams get together, it's just like threes everywhere and like the flow, the pace is all, it's up-tempo and there's a definite feel to that. And to me in these playoffs, the way it's going, I think that they want to beat each other so bad, especially like the Rockets are obsessed with beating the Warriors, and like there's just like these parts of the game where there's just no flow, you know,
yeah,
just very stagnant.
Steve Kerr said last night, too, he was really pleased with how they defended Harden. We're like, you don't expect him to miss that many shots, but if you can tell, when he gets the ball and they do the pick and roll, they're having both guys jump out at him, forcing him to release it, and so he's pleased with their defensive game plan. On the other end, you know, they're purposely getting physical with Steph Curry, who's also coming back from an injury, going at him on the defensive end and also really harassing him. You know, when he's on the offensive end, but forcing him to, you know, run through a gauntlet to get open off screens and whatnot. So you would think that maybe these teams are stepping up on the defensive
end. There was a
sequence
where Gordon was guarding Curry with the shot clock running down, and Curry was trying everything he could to get free, and Gordon was just on him, and like, you know, reading, and he blocked a shot, and Curry got it back, and then he went baseline, and he pushed him. Like, the effort was huge, and you would never see that in a regular season game like that. And so I think that's the difference.
All right. So, again, we'll move on real quick. But so to wrap this up, again, it's sort of an odd thing to handicap without Chris Paul. And you could be right. Who knows? The whole public, who I know, will be all over the Warriors. It could be one of those things. They're reasonably competitive for half. They just wear down. The Rockets give in. The Warriors win by 20. I know that's the popular sentiment that keeps driving this up. But I just thought, you know, on a hunch, in one of those short-term things, that the Warriors have looked fragile the last couple games. The Rockets are going to be able to deliver, you know what I mean, kind of an unexpected punch because no one's expecting them to show up on the off chance that they actually do. Again, with so many points to work with here, I'm just leaning toward grabbing them, especially if I can get a higher number.
I don't believe in Harden as a kind of a difference maker on his own when he has to be. They're gonna have to get contributions from Gordon and these other guys, you know, to stay within that number. I think Paul is a much bigger loss than Harden would be.
You know, I would agree, except to me, Harden showed me something in game four. Like I said, that dunk changed the game. You see what I mean, though? But he also scored like 18 in that quarter.
Yeah, I mean, Harden's one of the five best players in basketball. Like, I'm not. Yeah. I just don't think he's LeBron or Jordan.
I agree with you in the sense, though, that it's the leadership qualities. Like, if he were out, right, it's Paul who just wills him to those big plays. And you're right. Harden's just more of the glossy, you know, scoring type of guy. So, anyhow.
If they plan on, like, dribbling up the court, 19, 20 dribbles, and then doing those ISOs and stuff, I don't think it's going to work out without Paul there.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope someone on the inside, you know, I said Capella, they could use a big game from.
Yeah.
You know, to help offset, you know, get some contributions from those role players.
Is there any props that you like in this game? Because I haven't seen too many of them.
No, see, that's the thing, Mark. I was asking our managers here at William Hill before the show came on, and they don't have them yet. It's always these daily props are just of the, you know, you have to wait
they don't want to have them out too early.
Right, so we won't see, I'm sure, but as we discuss in the Celtics-Cavaliers game, if you check with William Hill Sportsbook tomorrow, I'll check your app. WilliamHill.us, if you don't have an account, they'll have all of it. So it'll be a similar thing. So you're going to see for sure Steph Curry, you know, your James Harden totals, and if you want to get the player props, look for them tomorrow morning.
Okay.
So, Mark, since we're on a little bit early, we've got a full slate of baseball. I know you're much more, you know, of a baseball aficionado and handicapper than myself, but with pretty much almost every team's in action here on a Friday. We're normally, by the time we came on air, half the games would already be started, but this is not the case today, so... With the whole lineup out there, what stands out to you? You know, there's a few pretty high-profile matchups. Let's just go into, you know, I know you're a Red Sox fan, same with myself. They're hosting the Braves, a surprising, you know, start so far, one of the better stories in baseball. Julio Teheran, plus 170 against the Red Sox, and Eduardo Rodriguez at minus 190. I don't know about you, but, of course, I'd be tempted to jump in on the underdog on that one.
I mean, the Braves getting plus 170 against anybody seems like a pretty good value bet these days. Just the way that they've been playing, and I still think they have the highest run differential in baseball. As of last week, they were. I haven't checked it, but I know they're one of the top teams in that category. So, you know, to see them plus money like that, you know, I'm a Red Sox fan, so I obviously probably wouldn't bet that. But the number is, it makes me scratch my head. But Rodriguez at home has been pretty tough, so.
Do you never fade the Red Sox just because you're a fan?
I do. I fade them sometimes, like when they throw Pomerantz on. But usually what I'll do is I'll bet a total when I know a Red Sox guy is going to get lit up. That's usually what I'll bet the overs. I won't usually bet against the pitcher because I'm going to sit there and root for him. You know what I mean? I don't like to voodoo handicap like that. But in any case, I mean, the price in baseball, a lot of times you just look at value, you know, and I think this is a value bet on the Braves. I don't love the Braves, but right. If the Braves were to win this game, it would not be surprising. And that, with that plus money, it's a good
sure.
value bet.
Sure. Speaking of value, I know there's one both of us had our eyes on because it caught me off guard. Tampa Bay Rays, they're at home. They've been struggling a little bit, speaking of which, but they finally beat the Red Sox in the series finale yesterday. But they've had such rotation issues because of injuries and everything else. The Orioles come in there. Of course, they've been one of the worst teams of all of baseball, too. But at least they've come around a little bit. They've been hitting it a bit, but they still lost 2-3 to the White Sox. But it's kind of funny because instead of just, I guess, calling up a bunch of minor leaguers or finding a way to acquire somebody through a trade or whatever, what the Rays have been doing is starting relievers and then just having everyone pitch in and do a few innings like it's some kind of playoff game where everyone works. The odd thing, of course, Sergio Romo is a lifetime reliever. They started him once last week and they're doing it again tonight. He's being opposed by, you know, the Orioles are having similar injury issues, but they called up a guy, Daniel Hess, who's already made a couple starts. He's been okay. So we're looking at the sheet here, and it opened up at, you know, Orioles minus plus 130 or whatever. And we checked, though, a few minutes ago. It was all the way up to plus 150, and I was thinking, you know, for teams who, and the Rays have been okay lately, but they're still relatively evenly matched. To me, you know, I just have to go against the team that's kind of pulling the gimmick here and take the plus money.
Yeah, and, you know, the Rays started Romo two straight days last week against Angels.
That's right, a
crazy thing, you know, and it's like the analytics in baseball is, like, crazy right now. And, like, the Rays are one of the forefront, you know, they'll almost try anything. It started with, you know, Madden being there. And, like, but their front office, they're, you know, in the front line of the analytics more than the other team in baseball.
Right.
So now they're trying this.
And Mark, what do you think? That's literally unheard of. People are shaking their head. I mean, you don't see this ever happen. It's like, or for instance, A-Rod back in the day, you see teams do this, which I actually think is kind of interesting. Back when the Rangers were just awful, he was by far their best player. Who was the manager? He just said, screw it. He's hitting first every game because he's the only good player we got, and we want him to bat more
was
than
it any, Washington
bat
back then?
More than anybody.
It might have been Washington.
And anyhow, I think you're right. And I thought that was an interesting but novel thing. Like I said, baseball, rarely breaks all its traditions and everything. But I think, yeah, having your best player in the batter's box as many times more than anyone else makes sense. But this thing here, starter reliever, I mean, I don't understand, say, the analytics. Like, I don't understand the basic, you know, common sense rationale behind it for a guy who's not used to being out there for the first, you know, he's used to either finishing. We know Sergio Romo all his Giants years. He was very effective as both a bridge guy and a closer. He was good, but why are they deciding that this is the best option? I don't know. But I also wonder, what do you think? If this somehow, say, works, so to speak, do you think it catches on potentially?
Well, I mean, he comes in that first game, and he strikes out the side to start the game. And then they put Yarbrough in, the left-hander for the Rays, and he pitches a decent game, and they actually win that game. Next game, he's in for an inning and a third, and they go four down. And then the other pitcher comes in. I can't remember who it was. I don't know if it was Snell or one of the other ones. But in any case, so it worked two times, and now they're trying it again for whatever reason. It, you know, obviously because the Orioles have a heavy right-handed start of their lineup. One, two, three hitters are all right-handed. So that's the main reason that he starts Romo in these situations, and so we'll see how it goes. But going back to Hess, I mean, he got lit up his first couple starts, but then since then he's been pretty dang good, and he had a great start against the Red Sox the other day, and so he's kind of figured out a little bit. And with this plus money, I mean, I like the Orioles in this situation, so I'm with you, value bet. As we're talking value bets, I think this is a good one. So we put a little money on the Orioles already.
Sure. Speaking of which, Mark, there's one of those days where it seems like there's a lot of matchups where it's kind of one team's like number one guy against the fifth rotation guy for someone else. The point being is there's a lot of huge gaps here in the money line. We saw the Cubs already come in today, minus 240 against the Giants, but there's a whole bunch of them left with a similar number. And we know with baseball, day-to-day basis, right? I mean, no sport does the poor team win more often than that. The point I'm getting at is I'm sure we're going to see at least one of these come home. So who do you like? Let me run it down here. For instance, we've got Nationals, Marlins. Marlins at home with Jose Urena on the mound, a guy who threw a no-hitter last year. He's plus 210 against Max Scherzer and a minus 240. You've got, or with the Yankees, you've got Luis Severino at home on a minus 240 price against Andrew Haney and the Angels, who are just looking pretty good over in Toronto, a plus 210. Let's go down. We talked about the Red Sox Braves. That's not, you know, quite the biggest one. Well, those two right there, with the chalk being over, you know, $2 with a couple, I think, live underdogs. Tell you what, as far as I'm concerned, I think Severino's been overpriced for whatever, for 2 years now. I would jump on the Angels, but, you know, the Marlins, again, probably have their best guy going. Which underdog would you take?
Of the two, I would take Urena just because he's got ability for sure. You know, it's just he's like 1-7, I think he is, but he's got to be the best 1-7 pitcher in the history of baseball. I mean, he's thrown a no-hitter, and he's super tough to hit at times. You watch him, his stuff is amazing. And so, you know, Nationals sometimes struggle to score. I would definitely look at the Marlins as one of the two. I mean, the Yankees are just so tough at home, you know. So it's just, if I were to pick a dog there, I would take the Marlins.
All right. Well, we're going to go off to our quicker break here to get a traffic report. So we'll be right back in a minute here on the William Hill Radio Show on ESPN 84.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Nagel filling in for Ken Barler as host this week with Mark Vespi here. A couple of things we should mention on the William Hill promotional side. Mark, the $5 progressive parlay card, I was checking it out as we came in here. I know Ken, he loves to play this, especially when football season heats up, but I've always thought the biggest value time to play it was when it was sort of an off time, right, when you don't have football involved because everyone's going to jump in. But you've got a mixed sports parlay card, $5 entry fee. You can play it anywhere, and you pick multiple games. And here we're looking at, you pick from anything from baseball, arena football. There's Xfinity, you know, 300, Australian rules football. Basically a sampling of everything that's on the menu. You take a pick or two from each sport if you like, but total of 15 picks. You run the board, you win the jackpot, a progressive, similar to a slot progressive where it just keeps building until somebody hits it. We haven't seen it cash in a while, Mark, and we're looking at it right here, just about $45,000 on the nose, just a tad short. $5 thing, if Ken were here, it's something we actually like to do quite a bit after the show. He'll even come around and pass out the cards and pretty much insist that everyone, you know, put one in. So maybe we can do that afterward, but that's a pretty sweet overlay. And, you know, it's kind of funny, Mark, because to me it seems, I know we've all come close and, you know, missed a couple here or there. As difficult as it seems, I mean, ultimately these jackpots get reset and everything because somebody hits them.
And they do. They hit them, and that's the thing. And for a $5 bet, like, you know, you go to – what's a movie cost you to go to, you know, for your entertainment value? You got 15 games in action for $5 and possibility of winning a pretty big pot. So we always play them, and they're fun. It's a good way to get in action.
And if you haven't yet, again, get your mobile account at www.williamhill.us. Of course, we've all had app accounts for the longest time, and we've spoke of the advantages pretty much, you know, every week on the show here, so we don't have to, you know, delve into it too much. But it's pretty much like the entire William Hill sports book at the palm of your hand. You don't have to run in and wait in line. You don't have to even run in and tap on the kiosk. It's from your phone. You just log in, and every single offering will be on there. So every baseball, you know, football, basketball game, anything you want, and including the technology that's all the rage these days in the industry, that being in-game betting. You know, just things like tonight. You get your Cavaliers-Celtics bet in. Let's just say, oh, you had, you know, the wrong side or whatever. Say you take the Celtics like I did, and they are down 20 points in the first quarter. Oh, now what am I going to do? Well, they're offering new spreads like pretty much every few minutes, every dead ball. And it's as if it's a brand-new game. So you were wrong to begin with, and maybe it's not working out so well. You might get a chance. You know, the Celtics are down 20. You can take them at plus, you know, 18 for the rest of the game. Would you like that better? There are times, as we've talked about, to enhance your position and sweep the board if you were right from the start, or plenty of chances to sort of you know, either cut your losses or even things out if you're on the wrong side. I know for all of us, as serious as we take it, there's probably been no bigger tool come along since we've been doing this.
Well, it's the greatest thing, too, because you can protect your bet. You know, you can guarantee yourself a win if you position yourself right in certain situations. I mean, there's so many ways to go about it, like, and or if you just feel like a game is going a certain way and you want to keep piling on your bet more and more, you know, as the line increases because you just think it's a runaway or whatever, which happens a lot in sports. And there's just so many different ways to get involved in it. And it's a great tool if you learn how to use it properly.
And how many times have you had, for instance, before all this even came about, where you made your bet, you're pretty confident on your side or whatever, and the team that you had, you know, was blown them out at halftime, they never looked back, and you're thinking, dang, I knew I should have fired more. Well, now you've got that chance. Like you said, if everything's lining up and you're confident that they're really going to go all the way with it, you could double down at halftime. You could push it. You know, you could get greedy, and even if you didn't push all in, so to speak, before the game, you can, you know, enhance your position by loading up on it, especially if, you know, at halftime, you know, they give you a number that sort of relates to the opening one, and you can just fire away. So before the break, we were talking about some baseball games and a ton of you know, tilts that are about to happen starting at 4 p.m. Most of them go all the way, of course, to 7:15 Pacific starts. But, Mark, so those underdogs we talked about, there's a few out there. You said you take a shot on the Marlins against the Nationals. Not bad. I actually like the Angels plus 210 against the Yankees, only because I feel the Yankees in general, I mean, they're good, but I've started to feel like these prices are too steep against teams that, you know, have a pulse. I mean, the Angels aren't, you know, a bottom feeder, so I think they're a live dog. We talked about we like the Orioles as well as a live dog. And as we go down the list here, one other that stands out to me, because, of course, it could be a postseason preview here, is this Astros-Indians. I've got to say, I was on the wrong side of it last night. I was pretty disappointed. The Indians were plus 120 at home. Clevinger was, you know, hanging in there. And I thought, you know, their bats finally came alive. They swept the interleague series at Chicago by a score of 11-1. Indians had been hitting poorly, but finally they came alive. I said, you know what, I think this is a good spot for the home underdog. I whiffed. I mean, they were up 2-0 and ended up losing the game 8-2. Tonight, though, your matchup, Mark, you got Dallas Keuchel against Corey Kluber. They flipped the script a little bit. Keuchel's been struggling pretty good this year. So Corey Kluber's the minus 130 favorite. Astros coming back at plus 120 with a total of 8. With the possible idea of this being a, you know, playoff type of preview, high-profile matchup, where are you leaning?
Well, you ever see Kluber with this price? You know what I mean? Like, pretty. We're talking about value earlier. I mean, it's pretty good value to me. I know the Astros have been kind of hot, and the bats have woke up a little bit in the last couple of weeks. But, you know, Astros got the win last night, so maybe Indians are due to kind of get the victory tonight. Plus, you get the lower price on Kluber. If I had to pick it, I would take Kluber. Just because I've watched Keuchel pitch quite a few times, and he's just been inconsistent, you know, and he just doesn't have that feel right now. Kluber, if he can get through that first inning or two, you know, that's kind of the deal with him. With this is a lot of pitchers, you know, if they can settle down and get through those innings without getting touched, then he could be pretty dominant. So I look for the Indians to bounce back, and I like the short number. So I'm going to play the Indians.
Okay, fair enough. You know what, another game, Mark, that caught my attention just because of the dynamics involved. You guys are probably aware, I mean, one of my baseball strategies, what I like to do, especially when at all possible. But I always feel like if you can fade the A's for plus money, you should do it almost any time. I always feel like even if they win a few, they get overvalued. I just love, especially when they're at home and suddenly the price is in their favor. I mean, I just did it. You know, the Mariners, they didn't sweep them, but they won the first two, three earlier this week, and I was on those. And tonight it's an interesting dynamic, though, because the Diamondbacks come in there. And I got to say, Mark, they're huge about face. It's something I found stunning, meaning early in the year they're winning every single game, sweeping road series. I'm like, hey, where did this come from? I wasn't really, you know, in sync with that right away. I was a little behind the curve. And of course, lately I start betting them, right? What have they done now? They've lost like 10 in a row. They can't hit worth anything. They're getting swept by, you know, the Brewers. And, but, you know, offense has just been a huge problem for them in every game. But they come in there, so this is interleague, so they're in Oakland tonight facing the A's. You got Patrick Corbin at plus 122 against Sean Manet at minus 132. Another funny thing I look for, though, is not too long ago after he no-hit the Red Sox, I figure his price would be way out of whack, right? So as soon as Sean Manet did that, like, I'm going to start fading him every time. And it actually worked up until he beat the Red Sox again last week. I'm serious, and I lost on that one. The rematch in Boston, he was like plus 140, and I actually bet against him. And he didn't pitch that great, but he got the win by default. He gave up like five runs. Oakland's bats were just on fire that day. So in this specific spot, I wonder where we want to go, because to be honest with you, Mark, I'm tired of ended up with an empty wallet, you know, on the Diamondbacks, and yet I still feel like, you know, matched up head-to-head with Patrick Corbin, this is too much, you know, respect. I feel like you got to jump in on Arizona here.
Yeah, and I kind of feel the same way, but it's just tough because Arizona's been having a hard time scoring. So yeah, I feel like you got to win this game like 2-1 or 3-2, which could very well happen. The total was 7 or 7.5.
Seven.
Yeah, so I kind of like it under. Excuse me. Got a little cold here. But I kind of like it under. You know, you got the two lefties going, and I like to bet unders when two lefties match up for the most part. You know, it's one of the principles I like to look for and spots I look for. So this is definitely one of those times. The ball doesn't travel as well at night in Oakland, and, you know, there can be a lot of low-scoring games there if the pitchers are on. And I look at this game as an under. And I do lean Arizona just because I like betting Corbin. He's been good to me this year, but it's just tough. Arizona just can't score runs right now. And Goldschmidt's been struggling. Pollock's out. Marte's been struggling. Like some of these guys, you know, that they've been leaning on. They just got Lamb back. He's been doing okay, but he's just coming back, so he's not, you know, he doesn't have those at-bats to kind of, he's not in the groove of it. And I think all those things involved are causing Arizona to kind of struggle at the dish right now. So I like it under.
Okay.
Long story short.
Fair enough. But, yeah, as you said, that's a meager total. But at the same time, like I said, especially in night weekend games, you see a lot of games going under in Oakland because, one, they can pitch pretty well, and Oakland can't hit much either. So facing a like-minded team with offensive struggles, it makes sense.
Yeah, but if Oakland hits a couple bombs, then they can score. But otherwise, they have a hard time scoring.
And let's ask you, and Chris Davis is out, their best power hitter.
Oh, yeah. That's big.
It's huge. He's, you know, he's the run generator, average home runs, he's the guy, and he's shelved on the DL with the, I think it's a groin strain. Let's go. Let me ask you about the Dodgers, Mark. Is this so weird? Again, talked about drastic turnarounds in a short period of time. Last year, they set a record pace with the amount of wins. They got 100, of course, ended up appearing in the World Series, and they have essentially, you know, the same roster coming back. Suddenly, you're really struggling big time right out of the gate. Looks like they're turning around a little bit lately. Offense has been an issue for them as well, but let's say, for instance, tonight, you got Ross Stripling, who is more or less a fifth starter type of guy, and he struggled this year, but they're still laying a minus 190 against Clayton Richard and the Padres, maybe more of a statement against how bad the Padres are. But with what you've seen lately from the Dodgers, do you think, are they really ready to turn the corner, or what's the reason for their struggle so far?
Well, the biggest reason for the struggle is Turner being gone, but he's back now, and, you know, he started out really hot his first couple games, but then he went on like an 0-for-12 stretch. So, you know, he's going through his basic spring training. I think that's been the biggest part. But Bellinger, I mean, I think the biggest part, some of these Dodger guys, and Seager's gone, you know. But Bellinger just, he swings for the fences every pitch. And it's just like, I mean, I know that's the way baseball is right now, the launch angle and all that. But, you know, they're really struggling to score. And they need these guys to put the ball in play a little bit more to generate runs. And it's just not happening. But I think they are on the uptick in scoring. They've scored a little more lately. You know, Puig has struggled. A lot of their guys, Taylor struggled. I mean, they've really had a tough time with it, you know. And so,
sure.
Seven runs seems like a lot to me in a Padre-Dodger game, but I think the I think the Dodgers are kind of looking to make a move here. They've been much better the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, let me ask you this, too, because I know we got a lot of local interest in the Giants. What do you think about what we've seen from them so far? It's kind of funny because despite the additions of, you know, McCutcheon, a few guys to the lineup supposed to invigorate some life into, you know, the offense there, it looks as though, to a certain degree, though, the starting pitching, you know, question marks have remained there. I guess what I'm getting at, Mark, in short, it, despite, you know, quite a bit of personnel moves to improve, they look about the same to me. You know what I mean? Now, how is it? You know, they've been this huge underdog on the road against the Astros, against the Cubs, and then you look at the results, and justifiably so, when you start thinking the Giants can't possibly even beat a halfway decent team when they're away from home. What's going on?
I don't know. That's a it's a tough situation with them. I think their personnel moves kind of haven't worked out the way they want. You know, what do you think about that? Just think those guys have...
Well, some of them have produced okay, but what do you think? I just still think they still are getting much out of the starting pitching. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, it's definitely... I mean, and, you know, they've got guys out. They've got a lot of problems, you know. And I hate... Their bullpen is... Every time their bullpen comes in, they just throw gasoline on the fire, it seems like.
Oh, yeah. Guys like Chris Stratton. Like, there are guys, a few guys that took a...
When Guerin comes in?
Right.
Guys, a mess.
Guys that took some chances on who you're hoping might step up. It hasn't worked out so far.
But back to the starting pitching. I mean, Smarge has been awful pretty much. Cueto's, he's got a little injury right now. And Stratton's been hit or miss. Sometimes he's pretty dominant, you know. But he's one of those, you know, pitchers that he's got to have both his pitch working or you know, he's got a great curveball, but if he's not spotting his fastball, then he struggles. Like, so these guys, you know, Block hasn't been great. I mean, they're just kind of hit or miss. So they've struggled on the road the last 2 weeks. I think they're like 1-9 on the road, or 1-10 maybe after today. So I would look to bet against them on the road the next few games again, because I think the Cubs are going to probably sweep in this series.
Yeah. Yeah, the Pirates just obliterated them too, and that's an average team, and they won. You know, they were lucky to get one win in that series. And
yeah.
The Phillies the week before did the same thing to him. So, yeah, it's too bad, but the Giants don't appear to be on, you know, an upward trend right now. We're going to go off to our last commercial break. Please join us again for our final segment. Just a few minutes here. William Hill Racer Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the final segment, this week's William Hill Racing Sports Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Nagel and Mark Vespi here with you. As we wind down and get into a few other sports before the break, we went over the baseball slate. Again, just a ton of teams in action tonight, games that just started all around the league. We're keeping half an eye on all the big screens here. We're seeing these teams in play, but, of course, games start as late as 7:15. So, for instance, if you're interested in that A's Diamondbacks game, you still got plenty of time to jump in. And starts all along basically the timeline, including a bunch of, you know, 5, 6 p.m. as well. So basically just the 7 p.m. Eastern starts are the only ones that are underway. But moving forward, Mark, we would be probably a little bit remiss to not mention the NHL Stanley Cup Championship Finals are coming up. The teams have been established. We have dedicated a little bit of time the last few weeks to talking about this, specifically with the Las Vegas Golden Knights being such a big story and their first year expansion team going all the way to the finals as a 100-1 underdog. Before the season started, they're right on the doorstep now. They're favored in the series. What I think is interesting, unlike, Mark, this dynamic we've seen in the NBA where it just seems like, yeah, home team's winning by blowout every game. It's becoming fairly predictable. The opposite couldn't be more true in hockey. You're right. It seems to be where the home court or ice advantage means the least, because what I was fascinated by is I study some of this and I do, you know, some of the stuff for Sportsline as well. But that Capitals-Tampa Bay Lightning series was just bizarre, you know, because the Capitals win the first two on the road, then proceed to lose the next three before then winning the next two. And basically every game but one was won by the road team. And it's just like, how do you do that? You would think blowing your 2-0 lead and finding yourself down, you would just be devastated, and they found a way to pull it off. And the Golden Knights have done that too. They ended their series short of seven games, but they, you know, lost a couple at home. And to me, it just goes to show that, again, maybe not that the, you know, hockey arenas aren't cheering loudly for the home team, but as it pertains to the outcome, there's less of a correlation than any major sport, where we're starting on Monday night at 5 p.m. for the first game. Golden Knights at home, so we're, you know, they're going to be down in Las Vegas, T-Mobile Center, home ice against the Washington Capitals. Minus 150 to win the game, plus 130 on the underdog, and for what it's worth, that's the exact same series price. So we're seeing where, you know, a few months ago before the season started, the Golden Knights were 100-1. You're now laying money for them to win the championship. Got a total of 5.5 with the under shaded at -125, over at +105. Although surprisingly, especially in this postseason, we've seen a high volume of these playoff games go over when hockey, we know it's a physical game, usually tightens up. You see a run on unders historically, but it hasn't been that way. Mark, I know you and I are both not, you know, extreme hockey fans in terms of knowing the ins and outs of the players and what's going on, but still a pretty big story. And to me, you know, as my action, you know, flows, this is where I bet, especially when I saw that stuff going on with these road teams winning the majority of the games. You're starting to see some value there, right? So I'd fire, you know, get that plus money. I mean, the Golden Knights, if they pull it off, I mean, not only, I mean, just think about, Mark, you roll the clock back like 20 years ago when the Carolina Panthers and, you know, the Jags entered. Remember, they had completely different strategies, too. The Jags have actually loaded up on veterans. That's why they were competitive early. But it still took them a few years to get in the playoffs, where Carolina built from youth in the draft. How just obscene is it for a team, you know, that's comprised of cast-offs, guys that other teams had to let go just so they could you make a formation of a roster, and they're in the championship?
It's amazing. It really is. It's a big story. And that's why I almost feel like they're kind of a team of destiny, just the way they've been kind of rolling through, you know, and everybody kind of expects them to trip up, but then they don't. And I think the series price kind of tells you that the book kind of thinks they're a team of destiny, too. I thought 150 was kind of a high price for them, didn't you? I mean, I was thinking -120 maybe, or just because of the home ice, but I don't know. It just seems strange to me. I'm just kind of rooting for Vegas. I hope they pull through. So I'm not gonna bet a lot on them, but I'm gonna put a little money on them to win the series and just root for them.
All right. And similar to the NBA games we gave you, where there's props and every player whatnot. Of course, William Hill's out in full force with this type of thing. If you know, similar to the Super Bowl, if you're into hockey and you want to have all sorts of action on it, this game one prop sheet is huge. So there's all kinds of things. From, you know, player to score the first goal. How awesome is that? Similar to the first touchdown. So yeah. Player to score the first goal, Alex Ovechkin's, you know, 6-1. You got all kinds of odds, you know, going on here. William Karlsson, 7-1. James Neal, 11-1. So, and there's also, yeah, team to score first in general. Will so-and-so score goal period? Will Nicklas Backstrom score? Shots on goal period, you know, 30.5 over-unders. So basically, if you like hockey, you'll be familiar with all this stuff. I mean, and it's, again, similar. It's kind of Super Bowl-style prop betting. You got it all at williamhill.us or in any of the physical sports books. And, Mark, as you mentioned, there's also, in addition to that basic series price, there's exact prices and number of games here. So, of course, a sweep by either team would be the hugest price. Capitals in four is 15-1. Vegas in four is 7-1. And it goes from there. So when you consider that Las Vegas is the favorite, most people, of course, expect some resistance to happen in there. You're going to see that them to win, well, basically, Golden Knights in five is the favorite right now. 5-2, followed by six games at 2-1. And, yeah, in seven games by 9-5. They're surprised. Well, actually, 5-2 is a little bit higher price. So, yeah, I guess basically Golden Knights in seven is the favorite at 9-5. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I actually like it because of the price. You know, Golden Knights in six. I think that's the way I'm leaning. Just that way, Golden Knights win. You get, you know, better price on your money. So I kind of root for it that way.
That's true.
Let's go Knights and six.
I see what you're saying, but whenever someone says favorite in six, you just realize what you're getting into. That basically, you know, that locks you into. They must win on the road to steal that championship, which is still kind of a rarity.
That's why the price is always
right.
Higher
so,
on those.
So you know what I mean, though. Yeah. So whenever people, so sometimes they think mindlessly, oh, I love the Warriors at six or whatever. Just, you know, understand what you're getting into, that
sure.
They must win on the opponent's court or ice or whatever. So, but I knew you were aware of that. It's just for our listeners.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's totally true. It needs to be said.
Right, easily for that price to stand out for that reason. But Mark, I mentioned to you during the break, I've been doing a ton of college football work. I'm actually grateful for my employer, Sportsline.com, where everyone's sending out the stuff and I get to stay in my realm with get a good look at college football, because some sports books have all these team totals out now where they're already giving you over-unders on wins per season. And I've been doing every single major conference that's already out there. So if you want to check out Sportsline.com, today I just published the Pac-12 and I did every other conference. So basically all five power conferences, every single team, I do an in-depth look. And it's hard to get the information at this stage of the game because the Phil Steele and your Athlon isn't even out yet, but I just dug deep. I went to, you know, the websites of the schools themselves and the media that cover them. I found out the information I could, and so I've got all my picks there. Having done so, I learned, I got a good scoop and a good feel for what's going on early with these teams. WilliamHill.us also has, Mark, tons of stuff. I mean, they still have futures that are already out for every team and to win the conference, things like that. But I also like a good prop. One thing we're looking at now to win the Heisman Trophy, I think is interesting because, like anything else, you know, the race tightens up, a few guys become kind of front runners, and you're going to lose your value. We mentioned last year with Baker Mayfield, the eventual winner, he was offered at 10-1, and it makes so much sense in hindsight. We're like a guy who you know is going to put up huge numbers every week. He's a great quarterback, and he plays in the conference with horrible defense. It's like, you know what I mean? My point being, because I didn't have him, but in hindsight, it's one of those, like, how did I not have a little something going on Baker Mayfield? And he had been a finalist two other times. I mean, come on. So we're looking here at William Hill's Heisman Trophy, your prop odds offering. It makes sense. Bryce Love, the Stanford running back, he was a finalist last year despite missing like two full games with an injury. He's right there at 7-1. Wisconsin running back Jonathan Taylor at 7-1. Ohio State running back J.K. Dobbins at 10-1, and he even opened at like 6-1. So he's fallen back a little bit. You know, there's Tua Tagovailoa, the quarterback from Alabama, came and saved the day. He's jumping in there. Of course, he's 13-1. He was going to automatically be in the mix because he did that. Auburn quarterback Jarrett Stidham, 20-1. He was a favorite. You know, he was a guy people were high on last year. Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm, 13-1. Clemson quarterback Kelly Bryant, 25-1. West Virginia quarterback Will Grier, 25-1. Oregon quarterback Justin Herbert, 18-1. I was wanting to kind of like, Mark, who stands out to you?
I mean, I kind of like Tua. I mean, he kind of burst it on the scene. And, I mean, you know,
best player, best team scenario.
Yeah, best player, best team. And, you know, with his passing ability, like, you know, I feel like they're going to throw the ball more. And, you know, he's a multidimensional. He can also run it, you know. So, like, he's going to put up stats in all categories. I think with that price – and best team, best player scenario, I think that's a shot there. That's the first one that jumped off the page of me just because of those scenarios.
Yeah, it's not a bad one. Again, as we mentioned, the time now, too, is where you'll find value in that, because if you happen to be right, there's going to be, you know, prices adjusted and whatnot. You can even hedge it. Also, Washington quarterback Jake Browning, who had a poor year last year, he came back for a senior year. He's 25-1, and Washington's going to be loaded. I'm going to say right now, look out for them. So, but probably the best team in Chris Peterson's tenure there, and they went to the Final Four two seasons ago, so look out there. One other thing I wanted to mention, because I did, I texted Ken early in the week. You know, he always loves a good bet. You know, he trusts my opinion when it comes to UFC and the boxing and whatnot, but there's a UFC card this weekend I like quite a bit. It's actually over in the UK. It's so from Echo Arena, Liverpool, where they're having a fight night there. And one of the young up-and-coming guys, kind of a local hero, Darren Till, he's fighting in his backyard. But he's fighting against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who's an accomplished. He's the number one contender in the welterweight division. The pick I've been giving out to everybody, Thompson's plus money. I like it quite a bit. Plus 115, last I checked. He's the more experienced guy. I think he's going to win. So there's one pick for me. We appreciate you joining us. Again, Ken Barler couldn't be here, but he'll be back next week. Download the app at williamhill.us if you don't already have it. We will see you next week. Thanks for joining us. Good luck on all your bets. William Hill Radio Show, ESPN 94.5 FM.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley, ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.